Hello everyone and welcome to the Debug Log episode 97. This week Andrew, Bina, and I talk about how bugs and glitches can turn into features. So during the production of your game and the development process, sometimes things pop up and they, you know, exhibit some odd behavior. And a lot of times you just kind of smash that out, like, yep, that's wrong, that's not by design, let's move on and fix that and get it right. But sometimes those little things, whether they be like, you know, movement or aggressive AI or maybe even, something that's misinterpreted by your audience, those things can turn into features or even new characters or, so they're like these little happy accidents that can happen. And, you know, so on the show we're going to go over some of those, like, you know, some of the big games in the industry that have kind of used those and dealt with those, and then like maybe even analyzing your own games and saying, hey, when something happens, like, you know, maybe be reflective and say, hey, how do I feel when this happened? Maybe this glitch is really kind of telling me something, like, hey, like, this might be a fun way to take the game. So, you know, it all sorts of things can happen when your mind's open like that. So anyway, so without further ado, here is the Debug Log episode 97.
All right, so good. You can take a break or anything?
I'm good. I can roll into it. Let me know what you guys want to do.
You need a chew or cheese it?
I finished the last one.
Get some more Cheez-Its.
I just imagine Avina doing it like Napoleon Dynamite eating the tater tots in class, like slowly.
Out of his cargo pants.
Yeah, out of his pants. He's like, just really
so
slowly.
So gross. Just see how greasy those pants are.
You're listening to the Debug Log, a podcast about game development. My name's Andrew Curry.
I'm Albino Parham.
And I'm Ryan Kilgore.
All right, we're back again. It's a lazy Sunday. Having some cocktails, some Cheez-Its. Good to go.
Yeah. Cheez-Its and water.
Today, we're going to talk about a couple of fun topics, like a fun like topic, and then we're going to get into some game analysis and very things that are related to our interest in the past. But the big topic today is glitches, but more importantly, glitches that became not only game-defining features, but maybe sometimes industry-defining features. A game, you know, the glitches and accidents, happy accidents that happen sometimes when you develop games, these historical instances of that, and then maybe ways you can keep yourself open to that as you make your game. Before we go into that, though, Obina, iTunes time, review time.
What you got? So I have one from Alan Rader, who says, helpful knowledge and inspiration for game devs, 5 stars. I've been trying to learn Unity for a while now, and I'm at the point in learning where I feel ready to start making my own games. I listen to your podcast almost every morning, and it inspires me and motivates me to continue the development of my game ideas, as well as give me knowledge that I need for future games. So thank you for helping me out. So thank you for that. Alan, actually, let me read another one. Actually, you know, double up. And this one's called Duper Useful by Oki Oates, who says, as an aspiring developer, I thoroughly enjoy listening and learning from this podcast. So thank you, Oki Oates and Alan Radar, for writing these reviews. They really, really appreciate them. And we like reading them, and they're always good for the soul. So thanks. If you haven't written a review and you like the podcast, like we're dealing out, just open up iTunes, download it, install it, and write us a review. 5 stars only, please. Thank you.
Yes, thank you both.
Yes. All right. Back to the glitches. glitches, I guess this is different from... We've done a lot of big categories for about bugs and glitches and all these other things. I forgot. We've been doing this podcast for like 3 years now. So I can't even remember. But glitches usually... It's the same thing as a bug, but a lot of times these glitches are – this is just my weird semantics. I always look at glitches as like just weird quirks of a system, you know, that somehow weren't – they just pop up out of nowhere. And sometimes they're not bugs, but they're, you know.
They have more personality.
Yeah.
I don't know.
They're just – yeah, maybe it's just because they
a
have this kind of –
a bug with personality. That's what they're
just – bug with personality. There you go.
So with bugs, though, it's like that's something you can test against. Are glitches more things that you really can't test against? Like QA can't really catch a glitch?
Well, I guess that's not actually true, though. I mean, you'll see in some of these examples, they could be considered bugs, but – maybe when a bug isn't fixed, a bug has actually not fixed. It just remains a glitch, too. I don't know.
I think the glitch is only really a bug when it's like, well, that's aberrant behavior and you're going to change it to something else. So, you know, if like, hey, QA is testing it and it's like, why are the exploding barrels chasing me? That shouldn't happen based under the game design. So that's kind of a glitch. It's, you know what I mean? It's right. Like, so that you would bug that and maybe change the behavior. But if you think like, oh, yeah, you know, maybe this is kind of fun. These barrels chasing me around. It's not really a bug anymore. It's kind of a, I don't know. So maybe a glitch is something that rides the line between the two, and if it could be promoted to a feature.
Well, yeah, maybe even just the size of it, because a bug could be just like, hey, this door disappears and I walk up to it. That could be, but sometimes behavior,
yeah,
these things that change behavior, change, you know, yeah, like you said, those things follow them around. That's a, could be a glitch. That actually goes in. So what I thought we'd do is go through some fun examples from the past. I read a few articles and watched a few YouTube videos of this and found some ones that I remembered and liked. There's a lot of them out there, but I grabbed the ones that I remember, you know, they're kind of memorable to me. And then also after that, we can talk about some ways to facilitate these things. It's, I think the overall effect of these, the ones that at least we're going to talk about, is that they were positive, you know? So let's just start going through them. The first one I pick is actually very similar to your example of the barrels following you, because this one, it involved a company called DMA Design. Back in the 90s, they were making a car. So was it car? What was it called? Chasing? Shit, I should have
written it. Race and Chase.
Yeah, that's
the name of it. Yeah.
Thank you. Race and Chase. And they were just, it's just different, you know, it was over the top. You know, head of cars and police cars and traffic and stuff. They had like simulated traffic and all these things.
Yeah, like a top down racer
right.
type of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And then they did something. They tweaked the AI of the cop cars, or just as a, you know, as they're developing the game. And then what that meant, or what the result was, is that anytime you nudge the cops or did a violate, whatever it constituted a violate, they said nudge, but also maybe just violated the law where they said, okay, we're after you now. They would, their recklessness, basically behavior got dialed up to 11, because they would go on the sidewalks. They wouldn't stop chasing you. Their relentlessness got dialed up to 11. They'd go around, then the other ones would join in. You'd be like eight cops following you at that point. And you're like, Jesus, get off of me. Like,
it's like they're committing more crimes than you did in the pursuit.
Yeah, yeah. I was just a jaywalking, man. I was like, what are you
doing? What the fudge?
And they thought that was hilarious and funny, and it was like just fun in itself. And so they kept that. After retooling, the game came out. The game was called Grand Theft Auto. That company changed their name to Rockstar, and that started a thing where even in GTAs now, that's the besides the story. I don't care who you are. I did this in Vice City and GTA 3. Like, outside of the story, the most fun thing to do is like, I'm just going to rack up some stars and just get this police chase going, because that's what everybody does.
Right.
Yeah, that's like half the time of you're playing that game is like, I'm just going to go piss about in the world and see how much of a hornet's nest I can kick up.
Yeah, I don't think that game would be as successful. I mean, even it's like, and so, and it's part of some of the missions too. I mean, you'll get it, but as ancillary as it is, and even in like Vice City, I don't think it had the same legs and like fun factor, you know, if you didn't have that. I used to like set up like, all right, I'm going to be in this. Now I'm going to go into this pizza shop and see if they kind of like, because they'll get out of the car. I was like, I'm going to see if they're going to kind of like reach the doors and come and get me, or like, what are they going to do?
Yeah, I think that was the funnest part. Was like, yeah, creating like whole experiences, like getting the rocket launcher and having your car stashed outside to ready to run and stuff. So it was really fun.
Yeah.
Becoming a criminal.
Well, then they, yeah,
becoming a criminal is what it should have been called.
Because then they get the help. Yeah, I mean, it is alarming, the police response. I like how they kept it, because like, they get a helicopter with like a minigun on you at some point, and then they send in the jets and stuff, like some of those, and you get 5 stars. So that's a fun one. So that's a really good example of what we're talking about. That's kind of a very minor kind of glitch, you know, that's just a behavior thing that became a defining thing for that whole genre, you know.
Which kind of shows you like a glitch can maybe get you out of your rut too, or you're like, you know, sometimes you get in a mode of thinking where it's like, it's only this, I've got this sort of myopathy around something. And you know, like I was reading in that article when they were making this, is everyone kind of like fell off on the gameplay until that glitch came up, and all of a sudden it just became much more adrenaline inducing because these cops were so tenacious. So it's like that kind of shifted your thinking about like, oh, the cops really wouldn't, you know, maybe do this when they're tracking down a criminal. It's like, no, they probably wouldn't, because it's super dangerous. But this is a video game, so freaking turn that to 11.
Right. I wonder how many times people, like game developers, go through like the game development process and meet a glitch and then just kind of write it off or fix it, and it could have been like a game defining moment. and they're like, "Ah, oh, this is not what I wanted." And they
all
just
the lost
it.
Fun
exactly.
in the world.
I wonder how often that actually happens.
Yeah, that makes me sad.
That's a good question.
Well, that's one of our tips later on, but we'll talk about it as we go through them. Is just keep your eyes open for those things because, yeah, like Brian said, don't get so honed in on this is wrong. No, get it, like just like this is weird. You know, like this is fun. I like this. Okay,
right.
One of the coolest things. This is a little bit less of a glitch and more of just the way something turned out that changed the industry too, in a way, just game design. This is for Space Invaders. So they originally made Space Invaders. Yeah, everybody knows what Space Invaders is. You have the rows of Space Invaders and they're coming down. And you have the barricades and you're kind of going back and forth and shooting up. Right. And so you're supposed to clear the whole board and you get a new board. And so what happens in Space Invaders is that as you clear the board, they get faster, you know, and as it's a common thing in games, you know, as it gets harder, things get faster, more intense. It's Tetris. Everything does it. Right. There's a billion games that do the exact same thing. Well, at the time, back when, you know, in the computer days when the things just ran at the speed of the hardware, right? So, like, the clock speed, you didn't do variable time. It's like, this runs as fast as these cycles are going through it. Mm-hmm. What would happen is this is just a happy accident. So, they would have, you know, 30, 40 ships. And just intrinsically, this is obvious as you think about it. This wasn't a design feature. They didn't mean it to do this. But as you cleared the ships, the memory and the rendering stuff would clear up. And so, it'd run faster. You're and right. So this is just they designed the game and made it. It's like, oh, crap, why is it getting so fast? It's like, I don't know, but that's pretty cool. And so it was just literally the limitations of the hardware and because it ran to that exact spec back then that they literally invented, like, difficulty curves in these modern games. Because you think about Pac-Man and other ones, they get harder, but they're harder boards. Or even, like, you know, Donkey Kong, the original, like, they just have different boards, but it doesn't get intense. You know, the intense the same way a Tetris or something like this does. So that's a little neat one, but it's a big, you know, it's a big thing. That's like funny. Just the idea of intensity increasing as difficulty increases.
That's interesting too. Cause it's like you said, it's you know, knowing how the hardware worked and like some of the background of like, how, hey, am I going to program via like time steps and time slices? Am I using time or am I just using pure frame rate?
Yeah. Cause something? Now we just have to do delta versus, you know.
Yeah. And so you can work out a simulation in a real time and not have to be, you know, locked into whatever your processor can handle at the time. But yeah, so it's kind of interesting to see that, like, oh, that totally, you know, played out for them in such a way that, you know, if you did that nowadays, most of the time it's like, that's bad. That is a bug. You're doing that wrong. Don't do that. But for them, it became a whole aspect of their gameplay. So
yeah, so I thought that was pretty cool. That's like one of the simplest ones, but it's a big, you know, as far as wide reaching what it affects.
Yeah. Side note, have you ever played some of the old games on a newer PC? Like, I one time bought the Ultima Collection. It was like Ultima, like, I don't know, 1 through 8, I guess.
Right.
And I installed 7 on the computer I had at the time. And this, you know, this PC was years and years beyond the release of Ultima 7. And I didn't even think about this, so I just installed it and started playing it. It you know, installed and started up fine. Then I clicked to move around my party, and it just went bzz, like, oh, yeah, lightning fast across the screen. I'm like, what the hell is this? And like, I'm like, something's wrong here. This is bug. And then I started reading the documentation, like, oh, we've included a program called Slow-Mo that will actually basically fill your processor's pipe to slow it down because those old games were made based off of the clock speed of the current generation hardware. So now me, years later, with something, you know, an order of magnitude faster or something like that, or at least maybe like 8 times faster, you know, it's like, hey, yeah, I can process this so fast it becomes unplayable because, you know, it renders and moves and does all that stuff 8 times faster. So
yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, just an interesting aside.
Just everything was frame stepped or whatever back then. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, cool. The other one, the next one is, it's not necessarily a glitch. It's just more of a mistake. There's a couple of these that are mistakes, but they're human glitches, I guess, is the famous Konami code, right? We all remember that because it became such a big deal, but it was originally put into Gradius for the NES, but it was just put in there for what you think it was. It's like the first time you had like sort of a console thing, but they put it in there because he sucked at the game. I'm not going to print Kazushi Hashimoto. He was developing the home port of it, but he couldn't get past, you know, doing the things and power, just like, because all those games are hard. So he literally invented the Konami code for that stuff, but then it just became, it became a cultural thing because it was in Contra, right? That's what everybody used it in.
Oh, yeah.
But
He's done a lot of other stuff too. I can't remember off the head. I'm going to look it up.
It was so mind blowing. And I guess it probably, you know, inspired people to make Game Genies and other stuff like that too, because it was just like a secret code. What the hell? This is cool. So, and by accident, it was left in there. I mean, you imagine what these days, back then, you just couldn't update the games and patch them. You imagine if before they even heard of it, they just patched it out, right? They left the console command in there, but they're like, yeah, whatever. These shipped, and it came such a big deal. So that's fun. Another big one is, you want to talk about this one, Ryan, the rocket jumping, bunny hopping?
Yeah, just a sec, though. I was kind of looking at this Konami code thing. List of games that support Konami code. This is a fairly long list. Looks like maybe 30 games at least.
They were busy back in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah. A lot of Contras, Castlevanias, Batman Returns for this NES.
It worked in Ninja Turtle game? Damn, I didn't do that.
Well, if it was that first one where you, like, that they released, it was hard as hell with that dam level, I could have used that.
Oh, yeah, the sewers, yeah.
Yeah, Sorry. All right, which one are we on? We're on the
rocket jumping.
Rocket jumping, bunny hopping. Yeah, no, this was one that, you know, it's one of these that just sort of emergent gameplay. It's sort of glitchy, but at the same time, like, nothing in the system was broken I ever heard of. But basically what this was is, you know, Quake 1 was released, and one of the first, or the first, I guess, fully 3D PC game, and it had fully 3D environments, so you'd have to traverse up, down, as well as like left, right, and you had rockets in the game, and everyone pretty much just used these for what you'd use a rocket for, which is killing enemies. But then somebody figured out, like, hey, if I point the rocket at the ground and then hit jump right as I fire, the physics simulation will actually put a push on me in the opposite direction, and I can go about 5 times higher than I ever could before. And so, like, this one thing unlocked a whole, like, different style of gameplay on levels and multiplayer and all over. I mean, it kind of changed the landscape, because now there's so much more mobility in the game that, you know, you had to think about things differently, like somebody just appearing out of nowhere over a wall, or even, you know, some of a whole speedrun community generated out of this, where it was like, oh, you know, those fast times you used to have in these old Quake levels, well, those are right out the window, because now I can just, like, rocket jump to the third level and, like, bypass, you know, 80% of the board, and guess what? This time for this level went from 4 minutes to 38 seconds. Thank you, goodbye. So that was just a really interesting thing, and, you know, instead of, like, trying to patch it out or do anything with it, I mean, the devs just I didn't hear anyone trying to solve for it. You know, they just kind of let it become part of the gameplay, and, like, you know, then mods later on and later Quakes, like Rocket Arena, that totally leaned into it, where they would develop whole boards, you know, based off of rocket jumping. So,
right.
Definitely kind of an interesting, cool type of thing that lives on today. I mean, that's something, anytime a rocket launcher comes into a game, that's one of the first things I do. Hey, can I rocket jump with this? Because that's kind
of
fun.
Yeah, that reminds me of, like, all those games that people are, like, doing speedruns with, and it's like, are they just a culmination or combination of just a whole bunch of glitches within the game, and where they just, like, find all these hidden tricks and stuff to just a speed through, speed run a game and speed run levels?
Actually, I think you're right, because I've seen some with, like, people will try to, like, speed run, like, the Half-Life 2 campaign, and the stuff I've seen there is definitely not, like, so, like, the rocket jumping, it never really violated any of the other parameters of the game. You know, you didn't clip through things or do something weird that sort of, like, breaks the veneer of the game or whatever. But, like, the Half-Life 2 ones I've seen where it's, like, you can actually, like, leave,
flying move across
through geometry.
The,
yeah, fly over. I'm sorry? Say again, Andrew?
Oh, I was just saying, it's just the flying across the, if you do, they have
cool
a, yeah, they have that form of, like, weird dashing thing where you go up and then you start flying across the map or whatever. And Half-Life 2.
Yeah, and yeah, and I've seen it where it's like, yeah, you get so high that you can, like, see almost like, it's almost like the map menu in the HUD, where it's like, oh, look, I can look down on the whole damn level from up here. Just a lot of weird stuff can happen, but this kind of, you know, the rocket jumping sort of stayed in its lane, but still was very helpful.
And that's why it's funny with these companies. You have to, it's hard to, and it's, I guess if it's your own game too, it's hard to know when to keep them in. Like this, especially ones like this, because there's some that, like we mentioned, like the Grand Theft Auto, that's just something that happened before it came out and they just integrated. You know, the Space Invaders one, that was just part of it before it came out and nobody knows the difference, right? The rocket jumping, maybe it was before they came out, but there's certain ones like this where stuff will happen, especially in these live games, you know, your MOBAs or your, you know, Destinies of the world, right? Warframes of the world where stuff happens and it emerges and the Fortnites and the community like goes like, this is great. We love this, but you know, we love doing this. And then it's like, whether you keep it in is a weird thing or you take it out. Like, remember I just remember this one, that remember the loot cave in Destiny 1 that right. popped up for like 2 weeks. People still remember that. And it came in it was a weird time because it came in a time there's nothing to do in that game. And the economy is so messed up, but you could go and get a bunch of loot. And it was really kind of this weird Pavlovian thing. And it was fun.
Oh, God, yeah. And I felt like a little crack addict outside the, you know. Outside
it was like fun, like, but it shouldn't be fun. And then, I mean, I'm sure they had a hard time because it wasn't part of their overall thing. And they thought they could fix it better and make you have more fun with the economy. Because it was fun because the economy was broken. And they figured they could just fix the economy, which is probably would have been their reasoning for taking that out. But for some of these other things, like the rocket jumping, you have to look. It's like, is this how we have to do maps now? I guess we have to, you know, integrate this into everything we do.
It's like becomes balance part of the game design now.
Yeah.
Exactly. And something you've got to consider for. It's like, well, if we make, you know, some more levels or DLC, you know, you got to think about like, oh, well, people can like jump over this with their rockets now. So you almost have to just embrace it and start thinking with it. So if you're going to keep it.
Right. Well, that's related to I was going to say that's related to the tribes one.
I was going to talk about bunny hopping real fast, too. I didn't really talk about that, but that one's it's sort of similar to rocket jumping in that it's in the vein of movement where, you know, people figured out, you know, using, you know, the input system and the physics system calculated things in such a way that they found out it's also called strafe jumping, by the way. So if you essentially were like strafe left and right as you were jumping and timing your jumps like right after you hit the ground doing another jump and strafing at the same time, it would combine those movement vectors to give you one greater than either of, you know, one on its own. So essentially what you could do is like, I think I actually remember me and a buddy doing this in Quake 2, is you'd fire like a BFG round and let it go down the hallway a little, and then you could actually sit there and like run and strafe jump and start accelerating and catching up with it and passing it, essentially hitting yourself with your own BFG shot, which, you know, normally that wouldn't happen, but since people figured out how to do this sort of dashing maneuver, it, you know, was very much possible. And I'm pretty sure I read an article one time where Carmack, I think, was trying to get rid of it, but nothing really felt right in place of it. And in the end was like, there's really nothing wrong with this, and just like kind of left it in there.
Right.
So
that's crazy.
But yeah, and that kind of leads into what you were saying, like with the skiing with tribes.
Right. Because so, that was, yeah. I never played actually the tribes. The original, I played the one, yeah. Wasn't it Hi-Rez here in Atlanta that did the remake a few years ago? And I played that one a little bit. And that became famous for the skiing, because I guess in the original one, when you're going down a hill, if you like kind of tap the jump button like repeatedly, like motion, like rapid fire, you would start skiing, like sliding. And then if you hit the jetpack, that had game famous had like fun jetpacks, you could like launch yourself off the hill, kind of like Tiny Wings, right? Remember that iOS game, that Tiny Wings game?
Yeah.
And that sounds, it was much easier. It was actually easier in the newer remake because you didn't have to do that, you know, you just kind of press down, like you press down and kind of hit up and you kind of like a swing, you know, like a swing set momentum kind of thing. But it's super fun. But apparently that was also one of these things too. That was just it was like, oops, this physics are weird, guys. 3D engines are new, you know?
Yeah. So did Hi-Rez, because they built that in Unreal Engine, right? So,
but it had the mechanic of, yeah, you could slide. It was fun. That's what I liked about it. You get going real fast.
Right. So they actually, I guess they like actively ported the mechanic over, you know, like, yeah, say, we want to make sure this stays.
Yeah, okay. I think maybe like you held down. You didn't have to rapid fire like it does. They describe it in the original. You just had to hold down a certain button and you kind of just start sliding. And then you can kind of just shoot off the tops of the hills and you just go.
That's kind of fun.
But then also it had a jetpack that kind of let you just kind of hover. You can even kind of do that in Destiny sometimes. I can go laterally really quickly, you know, like with a Titan or something. You know, like it had a jetpack like that, so you could just be going really fast to the side, you know, like flying by people and shoot them. I thought it was fun. So, and that became what defined that game. That's another one of that tribes. I mean, it's more of a cult thing than huge mainstream success because it's just PC.
I vaguely remember that because I mean I played that maybe back in early college and I do remember reading and like trying that out where it's like, yeah, if you like come off of this hill and then if you time it just right on the down arc of the other hill and jump, it's like, yeah, you just kind of develop this sort of like you know, momentum building, like you said, skiing is, it's kind of interesting.
You combine that with a rocket pack, you can get going. that's what.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. So that was one of the first big open world shooters too, Tribes. Just as a side note, that was their big thing, is these big landscapes and vistas and things like that.
So. Yeah. Related to that, another thing that just defined the genre that the game's in is combos in Street Fighter 2. I didn't know this is the one that I really had no inkling of before I started looking into this. Because up to that point in any game, you know, any fighting game, you would just do the combo. And the way, and what this brings up is the topic of animation canceling, basically. But the way it worked in the games before that, you would hit the thing and it'd play the animation. And when that was done, that guy, you could do a move again, right? Or that guy could hit you. There was like a log. There was an animation canceling. But I guess they figured it out. Or I guess there's a glitch where it kind of allowed for animation canceling. If you hit it just right, you know, you could do it right before the animation ended or something like that. To whereas you could stack, you could, what a combo is, I'm like explaining to people what combos in fighting games are. Or you could stack attacks before they could do anything. Where they could retaliate, and that literally was just a glitch in the animation canceling or non-animation canceling system of Street Fighter 2. But it was so much fun. They're like, cool, let's tweak this and like allow it and like just, you know, then adjust that margin where that can, you know, you can string combos together. But it didn't exist in conception before, supposedly, before Street Fighter 2.
That's really smart. Just seeing this is like, you could, because you could totally see that going in as like to the some animation programmer bug, you know, I can do this one, like this other move that'll cancel out this animation, start this one too early and start that move too early. You know, it's kind of smart to be able to like well, that could be a whole mechanic because it doesn't happen with everything and it only happens in these, you know, it's like, so people, it's like one of those master skills where it's like, yeah, you know how to play the game, but do you know how to combo, you know, that type of
thing. Right. And I was just playing Soul Calibur in like a arcade down in Oakland in East Bay, but I was just playing Soul Calibur with a friend and they were so good at it and like you could keep me locked down in combos for forever.
Oh, that's so frustrating.
And it was so annoying. I was like, I'm just literally standing here.
It's flawless victory. Jesus. What was that game that had like crazy, got what was it, Killer Instinct or something that was like,
yeah.
400 round 4,000 combo. You're like, Jesus.
X combo.
Yeah, well, that was, I remember a guy doing that to me in the arcade in like high school or whatever. It was like, maybe he's a little off track, but anyway, like he had Cinder, and at the end of the match, I think he did like an 80 something hit combo to me. It was just like ridiculous. And I think you could even maybe with him keep somebody in the air indefinitely.
Yeah, I don't know.
Just juggle. That guy, air juggling is another term that comes.
That's what's
this,
so annoying. You just like keep seeing your character, and it's like he's just playing the same animation over and over.
But if you think about it, this is like. The combos, that stuff, and air juggling, the combos is what makes fighting games so exciting now, like modern ones. Like, it's what makes them so electric and fun.
Exactly. And they tied in, like, really awesome animations and visual effects.
Right.
Because like, really sells it, yeah.
Yeah, but remember, like, the fighting games before this, when it was, like, Street Fighter 1 and or even that Kung Fu, and it's like,
Yeah, it was,
and,
like very, staccato. Yeah, yeah.
You're talking about the NES Kung Fu?
Yeah, but that's one of them, though. It's just like,
Wachink, wachink.
I remember, I think I played the original Street Fighter like that, too. So, it's just fun. This is another one. It's like, this happened when they were making the game, but it's like, keep your eyes open on that stuff, because it's literally, those games would not exist now if it wasn't for that discovery. Like, this is pretty fun. Like Albino was saying, like, don't just dismiss it. Like, this is actually, like, allow time to fuck around with it. You know what I mean? And mess around with a thing. And if they're like, come here for a second. Play me in this.
Keep
like,
it in
this
a branch.
Yeah. Yeah. Make a little side branch and keep it because it could be.
Right.
This is also, this next one's up your alley. You're the big MOBA player of the.
Right. One of my coworkers is actually just talking about this to us this week, but that's like the denying and last hitting in Dota. I never actually played Dota. My first like mobile was League of Legends, so yikes. But yeah. I guess you might.
But there's last hitting in that though, right?
Yeah, there's definitely last hitting, but I know denying's a little different. Where
denying's
you're
a little
denying.
Hardcore. You're killing your own like person.
And I think there's like you get a reduced gold for it, like reduced like profit from it than what they would. But you could completely, I know like there's like really skilled players that can deny creeps to their opponent and their opponent would literally get nothing the whole game.
Interesting.
So it's just like they're just really that good, but yeah, that's just like really doing a last hit on your own minions, which would actually force the player to not get any gold, so you kind of can leave them. But what's the history behind that?
Well, it said that So yeah, so basically, all of MOBAs come from World of Warcraft 3, right? From the Defense of the Ancients mod or whatever that they built, and that came League of Legends, and then Dota 2 came out of those, you know, different, you know, disciplines of that. But in World of Warcraft 3, that was the first one of those Warcraft games that had like hero system, which, you know, is what those are based on. But you have minions, but like just a lot, it just basically they didn't have, this is a simple one too, but it created this whole kind of strategy. It didn't have, I guess, friendly fire on your minions or things like that. And they just, it was just a mod that allowed you to kill anything. But, and that was part of the World of Warcraft 3 mod. But because that was tied into it, and you put it in a MOBA, that becomes important. If you're getting, people are getting stuff from killing your things, and the last hit is a thing, then that becomes something. Hey, wait a second, I can. And before it was zero, they don't get anything, you know. Now there's like, or you get full things, and you could get. So it's just a weird little twist that it was a mod and like a change in a game that, but that changed that was, the whole thing.
It seemed like there was one that was a feature or glitch that was, I guess, was it hated by the community? Like, people didn't like that, especially like people who played competitively, or I guess maybe the opposite.
Well, I'm sure at first it's such a big drastic change, right? And like, right, how right.
So I was wondering why that one wasn't something they immediately changed, I guess, or tried to change.
Yeah, who knows? Like, then that's any that's an old, we do a retrospective on that, it'd be crazy. Yeah, yeah. Just because that was just popular just as a mod for forever, you know. And right. Ice Frog and all those guys or whatever. But all right, I think we have a couple more. This is some big ones. We have a couple more simple ones. One of the ones I found is Mario, the multi coin blocks, you know, where you go ding 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 ding. Apparently that was just a bug. Like, no, it wasn't supposed to do that. And then they took it out and it was like, well, that was actually kind of fun. It's not a huge industry changer, game changing thing, but it's like kind of cute. You're like, yeah, everybody knows what those are, you know.
Yeah, well, it's kind of like one of those feel-good things where you're like, oh, man, I'm getting more coins. Yeah, yeah.
Keep it going. Right. Keep it going. And then you
get, how long is this going to last?
And then you get hit by like a flower pot and then you're dead.
Yeah. A wrench. Hammer Brothers. A wrench. creepers in Minecraft. People probably know about this one, too, that when he is, what's his name? It was creating Minecraft. He did most of that.
Mahjong?
Yeah. But
no, that was a company.
Yeah.
Who was that, the dude? I don't remember.
I can't remember his name now.
Do they know?
Pearson guy. Yeah. He created.
It's way too normal a name.
Marcus Pearson.
Marcus Pearson, yeah. He created. He was trying to. But he, most of those models, I mean, you can tell it's all blocky because he didn't create them in 3D. He just, you know, made them in programmatically, right? And he just kind of figured out, like, okay, so, you know, person is this, two blocks, you know, everything was made programmatically. Even on his side, he didn't originally model it, he just figured out the, you know, different algorithms for it. But I guess he was trying to make a pig, but he got the axes messed up and it made a really tall thing with like little tiny arms at the top, and it looked really weird. And then so he just made it green and he just made it a zombie, which are the creepers, you know, those are the main zombie bad guys in Minecraft. But he was trying to make a pig. Yeah, so
he basically created this horrible like monstrosity.
Well, it's one of the most iconic things from Minecraft. That's what all the toys, like, you go to Walmart, those are the toys, are the little creepers. The kids are that for Halloween. It became a Halloween costume because he just, you know. And also is one of the last ones I had, and you have another one, Ryan, is the Adventure, the original Adventure game on Atari. People probably know about this one, but
Is this about the programmer that put it's like the first Easter egg?
Yeah,
that type of thing?
Yeah, but it applies to this too, is because he put that in there because of a glitch. Because, yeah, it was a programmer. What was his name? It was Masterson.
Oh, God. Jesus. We're
the most unprepared show in the world. We're just like, my God. Oh,
well,
my God.
We don't know where the conversation's going to go necessarily. So.
Oh, I wrote it in here, so I probably should have his name.
Oh, well, that's true. You suck. Okay.
But, I think it was William Master, maybe, but he was a programmer, he was the single programmer on Adventure. And apparently at that time, Atari wasn't a great and fun place to work. You know, just like, wow, maybe some other game dev places. And so what he discovered, there's this thing called sprite glitching, which would happen when there's too many characters or too many objects on the screen. but it would allow like the sprite to almost like a quantum state of a sprite to exist or not, but it allowed you to put secrets in there or like secret doors or whatever. So because of this glitch, it gave him the idea to put this in there and put a hidden room that when you went into it, it said this game was made by and it had his name. And that was like, it's also the first Easter egg, you know, what we call an Easter egg in those games. So, but it's all because of a glitch, which I think is fun.
Yeah, Warren Robinette.
Well, that's not what I said. So Warren Robinette, sure. Okay.
Yeah, but I feel like, I don't know. Look, I see a picture of this guy. Maybe getting this wrong. I don't know. But yeah, anyway.
God, we suck. Yeah, it's Warren Robinette. There you go. That's actually what it is.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on.
Oh, no, it is this guy. Okay, yeah. Never mind. All right, never mind, never mind. Sorry.
You have one for Mortal Kombat, don't you, Ryan?
Dude, this is one, yeah, I kind of just like you were saying, like researching the episode, kind of looking at this. I remember like the rumors of this, but didn't know the background of it. But so as far back as Mortal Kombat 1, you know, there were, so arcade industry back then, you know, they couldn't release like DLC or like quickly update things as much as they used to back, like, in, well, as they do in the current day. And, you know, one thing they did back then for Mortal Kombat 1 was, okay, let me take another step back. So basically, you know, in arcades, you get a release like Mortal Kombat, right? And, you know, that's all, you know, just hardware in that arcade, in that cabinet. And so you'd get kind of a dump of that game into that cabinet, like Revision 1. And so you'd get Revision 1, and it, you know, have all the characters and the gameplay, and it's what you knew as Mortal Kombat. Well, they would also have other revisions and updates that would come along. And one of those for Mortal Kombat was actually putting in the character Reptile. So I, you know, don't know how much Mortal Kombat people played back in the day, but you could actually, if you got like a, I think it was a Flawless on a certain level, you could go down into the pit.
I think you did a Flawless Reptile and did like an uppercut or one weird thing.
Yeah, it falls down.
Yeah, on the bridge level, yeah. And so if you did that, then you could fight Reptile. So, you know, this introduction of a new character sort of kind of seeded this thought in people's head that, hey, you know, there's potential for new or hidden characters coming out in these arcade games, which is a big deal when you consider the update pipeline, which is, you know, you've got to update a physical device in a specific location. It's like somebody has to come in there and do that. It's not like just turn it on and your Xbox updates type of thing. So one thing that happened is people started noticing in the arcades, like occasionally a listing for some of the achievements or things done on the machine, like Ermax. So you'd see like Reptile like wins, and then also underneath it Ermax after one of these updates, and people are like, Ermax, it's like, this must be a new character. Like, there's another hidden character that's going to come out. This, what are these Ermax? You know, this sounds amazing. They're going to give us more stuff. And what ended up happening also with that release is you'd get this one character show up, and it was still said Scorpion in the, like, you know, the title bar, but instead of the yellow, he had a red gi. And so people are like, oh, this is teasing a new character, something like that. And which sounds all well and good, and based off of the previous stuff with Reptile, you're thinking, yeah, maybe that's what that is. But that's absolutely not what it was. It was actually Ermac stood for Error Macro, which it was basically saying when it was trying to load Sub-Zero or Scorpion, there was, you know, there was some error that happened, and the Ermac were basically how many of these error macros got thrown off, you know, while running this version of the game. So It really sparked an interest in the community. Like, some of the gaming magazines at the time picked it up, you know, were pontificating about it and all that. But it's one of these glitches and speculations just because of the environment at the time that turned into them actually releasing the character Ermac in Ultimate Mortal Kombat 3. So it went from, like, you know, just a complete debug. How many errors are we throwing here? Like, what? Something went wrong. Let's log it to, here's a whole other character in this universe. So basically a debug log type of thing turned into a whole other character in a gaming universe. And so Ermac has been around, you know, he was in Mortal Kombat 10. I think he's going to be in the new one, 11. So I thought that one was very interesting. It's just like, you know, again, what people's been like, mental sort of, what they thought was going to happen with the game at the time, sort of how they contextually thought about it, definitely fed their want for new content and then completely led them down a blind alley. But in the end, it was kind of fun and got them a new character down the road. So
can you imagine, just like Obina, you said that like you're wondering how many errors like this happen and then people just program them out or whatever before they notice cool things. Can you imagine how many errors like this happen. And like, cause with a lot of games, I mean, there's, when you put games out now, like sometimes it's on Windows devices or iOS or whatever, there's a lot of variability in it running or in that device messing up and bugs like this happening. But imagine back then, these are like exposed boards and those big wooden things and like smoky arcades. Like, people used to smoke inside. I was just like, no wonder all these weird stuff's happening. Like, you know what I mean? So, like, people spilling drinks all over these machines. And it's like, I saw a dragon in the game. It's like, what? It's like, I don't know. It's just something weird. It's like, imagine all the weird stuff that happened like back then that, you know, never became, this became something because it was like an actual systematic thing they messed up on, you know, and less of a weird glitch. But I'm sure there's a lot of weird errors back then.
Right.
Oh, you got a point. It's like, it's you know, it's hard to sort of communicate and aggregate that stuff back then. So there may have been a lot of interesting things people saw that just like, well, there's not, like, I'm not going to tweet about it. I'm not going to go to a message board or something like that. It's just like, whoa, I lost my quarter. That was weird, you know?
Some 15-year-old kids jamming that new board in there. I'm just like, yeah, that's good. Yeah.
Whatever.
Kill screen's coming up. Kill screen's coming up.
Now you're going way back.
Cool. Yeah. So these are some of the ones, those historical ones we found that I think are really cool. I like thinking about that stuff, but I think the tips we have kind of came up in there. Basically, you know, it's like, just keep your eyes open for that. You know, don't program them out like we was talking about. Like, keep, because you could have jewels and stuff that, that don't, you know, that you could actually just kind of sand edges that you don't want to sand off. And that's why I put in here, like, I said something about playtest outside the box, meaning playtest your game, but don't just be thinking about the parameters of it. Just be messing around with it. Because a lot of the stuff that we didn't mention, that there's a lot of examples of games that's not even pertaining to this, that they're, when they're playtesting, weird stuff happens and they make whole new game modes and stuff. You know what I mean? That,
right.
That's what
I got a question about
Gambit and New Destiny and all that other stuff is. It's like weird modes people just try out. Go ahead.
I was saying, with that one, I think that's a really good, that's really good advice, but I feel like practically it's really hard to play test outside of the frame of mind that you're in, I guess, when you're creating a game. I was wondering if you have like tips to, like, how do you see outside the box? Like, how do you play test without, like, you know, because you have your ideas of what your game is, and it's really hard if you're not actually actively in it to see outside of that.
Well, I mean, maybe it ties into just to be like the whole, all of these are like tied. I put four of these things. They sound different, but they're all the same, which is really just, they're really repackaging the same thing. Because I put keep your eyes open. Don't be afraid of weird, try weird things, even outside the box, and good ideas or don't seem like them at first. Basically, like, they're not, it's basically just, don't be so judgmental. Like, people get real emotional. I just see that a lot of times when things are messing up or thing. So in your playtesting, yeah, you're just playtesting your game. You know, you don't know that the next, you know, chicken mind blowing glitch is about to drop on you. So you need to just do what you can to test your game. But when something happens, anything happens, don't just like, mistake, got to fix it. This sucked, crap. You know, and get all like, just be right. Reminded, like, that's weird. Cause you know what? It might not even be useful for this game. But like you said, just stash it. Because you know, that might be like, that's a whole nother game right there. Like a game there you could do this, this, and this. Like, I'm just saying, in a creative sense, don't get so, especially with like game design, something, or just, this happens in projects in general, but especially when it's like an indie project and you're kind of forced not to make compromises. Sometimes, like, you can get so locked into what your vision of it is where you don't see gifts being dropped in your lap. You know what I mean? Like, oh, cool. No,
yeah, I get it. I think that's true. And I think maybe just like, I think we mentioned briefly kind of as a side, but like setting it aside and like in a Git branch or something, you know, just in your repository, having another branch of that bug, if it, you think it's cool, or just like logging it in some tracking system.
Yeah.
Whether that's like, if you're using Jira or what's the other one? What's that Kanban board that we used to use?
Asana. Yeah, or other ones are.
Yeah.
Was the one you guys are using at Sprockets?
The free one. No, the free one that we used to use at the
Trello.
Trello. It's just like quick and easy, just to note like, hey, it was really cool when this happened, just so you have it logged somewhere.
Because they might be ideas for features and stuff. So if you have like multiplayer games, like, that'd be a cool power, you know, that guy time dilated. But what if that was like a time dilation grenade or stuff, you know, stuff like that.
That's true. Yeah.
I think it'd also be worthwhile like doing almost, you know, having somebody think about it in a before and after, like, meaning, you know, so say this glitch happens, and you're like, oh, well, that's not what was expected, but like, keep playing with it for a second, like, oh, is this kind of fun? Is this kind of out there? Does this help, hurt? Like, what? How do you feel about it? And then, you know, maybe even correct it in the next build. Like, all right, yeah, that wasn't supposed to happen, but we kind of played around with it. And is the game more or less fun with that corrected? You know what I mean? It's like, oh, yeah, like in GTA, it's like, well, no, 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 the AI wasn't supposed to be that aggressive. Let's fix that. Okay, we can totally fix that in the next build. Great. I don't like playing this game as much anymore. Can we get that thing back in here? You know, it's like, so it's almost like, right. You know, doing a diff of it. It's like, you know, hey, that isn't right, but it was kind of weird and maybe cool. Like, what if we, you know, play with it for a little while, then pull it out and go back to what we wanted to do? Oh, what we wanted to do is far less interesting. Let's put that back in and see where that takes us, you know?
But what you said is totally right there. I was mentioning independent things, but you're totally right. With a team dynamic, especially with places you work and other stuff, this is how bad movies get made. This whole dynamic of going, there's like, there could be 40 people on a team. And they all get like, well, we have requirements. We have this design diet. We have the stuff we're supposed to do. This is what we're supposed to do. And then programmers, that something happens, like, crap, that was a mistake. We shouldn't have done that. But a lot of times people get into the idea of like, well, we're all together. And it's scary to bring up the ideas like, well, hold on a second. Do we want to change this? You know what I mean? Like, that's really, sometimes that's really resistant to do that. Instead of going, let's just fix it. Let's get it in there. Let's get it. Because you're just the trains moving. Instead of going, but wait a second, do we need shields at all? Like, that's like a weird conversation to have in some teams, because they're like,
yeah,
like, that's the way, you know.
And I'd also, yeah, no, it absolutely is a weird conversation, because it's almost like you're, you know, saying, you know, well, because you get some of these designs and you get people on a path, and it's almost, you know, like, do we need to take communion? I don't know. Right. It almost becomes a religious thing at some point, you know. It's like,
but it can be bad too, because you can, you know, lose foundation too, right?
Yeah, and obviously, you know, this has nothing to do with religion, but you know, but yeah, and so it's like one of those things, but it becomes like this thing is that somebody speaks up and sort of maybe anti the current establishment, and you're like, oh, hey, yeah, no shields. And like, well, wait, our game, some stuff's based around shields. That sounds crazy. It's like, yeah, it may be crazy and it may be stupid. We can try it. It may be a waste of a week or 2 weeks, and that sucks. Or it may completely pivot our game into something that's way better.
Yeah,
I think that's why companies do like retros and stuff, or try to do retros and that kind of agile, I guess, methodology. Is like, those give you an opportunity to actually bring up those things that you see during the gameplay. It's like, hey, this is weird, or do we need shields, or, you know, does combat have to work like this? And I think that's where you are supposed to like kind of vocalize that, especially in a team dynamic. When you're personal, like doing more things privately, just having friends play it, I guess, and having some other opinion, or also, like I said, just jotting things down is another way to like make sure you remind yourself to, hey, do I really need this, or is this a good or a bad way of doing something?
Yeah, and that's a good point about the retros. That is a good practice to make sure that I'm always just like, there needs to be self-reflection happening always, right? Like, what, I just see it too much in group environments where people are like, in meetings, people, you know, they're like, okay, so this is then, okay, so I'll get on that. I was like, hold on, we didn't even decide that we're like, people just like to have progress happen without anything. It's like, it goes down to that fundamental, like, what problem are we solving? And usually when you're making a game, the problem is you're making it, the problem you're solving is making a good game. I want to make a good game. And then sometimes it can come in and you're going, and there's trade-offs, of course, with everything, but you just make sure you're not just going through the motions. And it's actually some of the things like they pop up with restraint. You go, hey, wait a second. And those retros, like you said, are a great way to do that. You're like, hey, excuse me.
Yeah. And I think one thing that we as in game developers, game studios, kind of like fall into the trap of, you know, those trade-offs that you mentioned, Andrew. It's like, when we like are having retros, and it's like, hey, this would actually make our game a lot better, but we don't give it enough credence. We're like, oh yeah, it probably would, but we need to make progress, and we just keep pushing along. And then usually, in my experience, most often than not, it actually comes back to bite you, that you didn't like really take that feedback seriously, because there was a reason for like, hey, this is going to make our game much better. And then you're like, oh no, I just want to make progress. So you actually end up losing time, because sometimes you actually try it out anyway. So
yeah, I mean, I'll just add it to that, the big button, as a creative, it's like, this has got to be like any type of creative person, whether you're a chef, whether you're a musician, whether you're a game designer, game developer, whatever it is, your idea is putting a vision together. You got to get better. Like, your number one skill isn't necessarily doing the thing you're doing. That's a craft, right? Your number one, like, kind of ability over other people should be envisioning something that other people can't see. You know what I mean? Like saying, oh, I'm creating this because I see how this could end up, right? So you should always be exercising that and not get lazy. Like, just even if it's just thinking about, like, how would that actually work? because then you might, because a lot of people just dismissed it. And I was like, no, not as a creative field. You guys should be really thinking every possibility through. You should be like a writer's team, a TV writer's team, breaking a story. You know, they spend 4 weeks and they're just talking about how an episode will be. Right. Like, right. And it's like, what? But that means this doesn't make sense. And that means it, but it's required if you want to be, because that's what we do the best, though, more than anybody, you know, really trying to envision what something means or what implications are of a certain decision.
Right. Well said.
So, all right. That's a good. We're going to take a break and we're going to come back with games of the week. Tonight we're going to talk about a couple games really quickly, and I think we might visit on this in the future too when we get Zach on here as well. But I thought we'd talk about this because it combines two of our things. We have a whole ongoing history with Destiny-like games, and we've been talking about Anthem for a long time. But our other love, it seems like we're just a bro gamers, like FPS is, man, are these Battle Royale games. We had a huge bunch of episodes about PUBG, a whole episode going down through that, and then that's just been a big phenomenon, the Battle Royale stuff over the past year. And so that, and the other thing in the last episode, we finally ended up talking about Fortnite and the effect it's had over the world, and like, that's what it's going to be like forever. You know, that's where we were at that point. Then we were just eagerly awaiting, you know, January and February for Anthem to come out, because that's been our most anticipated game 2 years in a row. I think all of us said that. But meanwhile, about a month before Anthem came out, Respawn Entertainment, makers of Titanfall and Titanfall 2, and they're working on a Star Wars game. They're also, the nobody knew what the Titanfall team there was working on, because they have a couple teams now. And they're like, well, it's probably Titanfall 3 or whatever. Nobody knew. In fact, even a year ago, funnily enough, a map leaked saying this is a map from a Titanfall Battle Royale. Nobody believed it. It didn't get much traction at that time, which is funny, because at about, I think it was the end of January, right? I forgot what the date was when this came out. They just announced the day before, like, hey, we're going to do some kind of announcement or a weekend. They didn't, they kept really quiet, and they had people come in, like journalists, over one weekend. And by, and then they said on Wednesday, they couldn't talk about, do anything. And then they said on Wednesday, we're going to release or announce something. And so that Wednesday came along, they did a press conference, and funny enough, they released Apex Legends, which is a battle free to play one, first of all, battle royale game based loosely in the Titanfall universe, but there's no Titans, there's no some wall jumping and some of the stuff you running, the stuff you know from Titanfall, but it's loosely in that universe, but it's basically the Titanfall engine. And yeah, that's it. It's kind of more of an Overwatch style. There's these characters with powers. You know, eight different actual named characters with powers and different things and ultimates. And so it's basically a lot like Overwatch, right? And
yeah, it's got some character driven stuff.
And that came out. Nobody expected it. We're all just waiting for Anthem. Nobody cared at first until we played it. And it's goddamn excellent. This game, it just took over from Giant Bomb to other people I listen to. It's undeniable. In the past 2 months, it's overtaken Fortnite as the most streamed thing. Look on there right now, I bet you. There's 200,000 people doing Apex, and there's probably 100,000 in Fortnite. I don't know what their numbers are behind the scenes, but I know they had like, what, they have 25 million in that first couple of nights or something, right? In that first weekend?
Yeah, it got up to that. Yeah, as far as like people like logging in, playing, whatever, yeah.
So what did you think? What were your initial thoughts on Apex when it came out, Ryan?
Sorry, I was checking out the Twitch numbers right now. Yeah, it's about dead even right now.
It's a lazy.
Oh, well, when Apex came out, like, I was just completely, I was surprised. I was like, you know, sideswiped. I was just, yeah, nobody knew what Respawn was really working on, except they had mentioned that Star Wars game, like you said, but nobody was expecting this. I mean, and all of a sudden I find out it's like, oh, you know, I really love Titanfall 2. It's a great game. It's cheap now. People should go play it. It's a fun game. But, yeah, you know, it's like, oh, the people that made Titanfall, and by the way, Respawn also used to be the people who did Modern Warfare before, at Infinity War, before some kerfuffle
they
happened.
Did, yeah, but, Modern Warfare before, they introduced that whole style of the FPS, too. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, and so these guys have a really solid track record, and this came out, and I'm like, okay, well, I'll check it out. You know, we've had some fun with, like Andrew said, Battle Royales in the past, and Yeah, man, like you said, it's just, it is so well polished. It's like, and from being out of nowhere.
There's no demo period. There's no beta period. There's nothing.
Nothing. And you know what? Like, I have had way less problems with that as far as like just getting in, like technically, like getting in and getting on a server and it not crashing. I've had way less problems with it than I have with a lot of other, you know, MMOs or shooters that have had open betas for two months, you know, which was just crazy.
Well, yeah. And then it also, we didn't mention Call of Duty, the Black Ops blackout mode that came out this year. And that was for controller. That came out, you know, before last year. But this is, again, the things they do so right in this, it's made for basically, you can use a controller or not because it's on PS4. And I mean, something PUBG was Xbox, never the case. Yeah. I think we even mentioned that Black Ops was really going just after a PUBG crowd in our last episode. But this one, it's like, it's almost splitting the difference between Fortnite and that because it has fun, goofy, cartoony. It's a very stylized thing. It's not as crazy as Fortnite, but it's fun and colorful and interesting. And they do so many things. I mean, we almost need to break this down in design. I just want to at least get it out there and mention it before it goes another 3 months or hopefully have an episode or something where, because I think we should break it down, but there's so many quality of life stuff they do in this, above PUBG, above Fortnite, that are just like from pinging things. They have a context driven pinging thing where you hit a right bumper. I do it on the controller. I'm a filthy controller player, but you can ping targets. If you find a weapon, you just hit the thing and it'll ping that, hey, this weapon's here. Like, you don't have to talk to anybody, but you can communicate so well with where, like, points on the map and points when you see an enemy and see where they are.
It's that accessibility. Yeah, they have a high level of accessibility. So, you know, if you're somebody who does not want to talk to people, but you want to play one of these games, you can now be effective at it because, I mean, this is like shit you would say, like, you know, like you, Zach, and I would play these games and be like, oh, hey, there's a backpack over here at this level. We'd say that to each other over Discord. Now, yeah, but if it's not you guys, I don't want to talk to anyone.
But it's also, even if it is me or you.
And so now they have a mechanism for that where it's like, oh, bam, there it is. You don't have to talk to them. Now I'm more likely to go online by myself.
But even if it's me or you, like, I don't know, it's like, you're like, it's over here, like, where? It's like, I don't know where you are. It's like over here.
Yeah, very true.
It's like, there's an enemy, and I remember PUBG, we had to try to get good at, like, is it 300 on the coordinates? It's like, where's 300?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Northeast, I don't know what direction I'm in.
Spin away, keep spinning till you see gunfire, I don't know.
But they do so many things, so they have a little indicator when your people are shooting down there in the UI, they have... They have a respawn mechanic where you can respawn your enemy, your allies that have died, which is cool.
Mm-hmm. Which I think Fortnite recently just added that based off.
Oh, really? Yeah, and that's cool.
Within the last week or something. Yeah.
Yeah, because it's a no brainer because it's like it keeps it going and it keeps you invested in watching. You're like it just keeps everybody kind of like, oh, this is fun, and it gives another risk reward thing. They have a real simple ammo and loot system where it's like. They have colors, you know, the rarity colors, but they also, with the ammo, it's like based on, it's like heavy, medium, light, but it's based on, those have colors too. So you don't have to be, there's only like three guns per kind of category. You can kind of learn them. Like they kept it very simple and very, and then the cool thing is that each of those player characters have cool powers that you can explore.
Yeah.
Just like Overwatch or something.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like they've kind of merged the two things, right? You've got a cool character shooter like Overwatch now merged with a battle royale, and I know this is most of your chagrin, but yeah, we can get to that. But I think that was brilliant because
it's like
now
a
people
sci-fi
can attach
setting
these characters.
Of it, like it's really cool. Like you'd love it.
Yeah, but and it's a brilliant move, I think, because it offers something very different than Fortnite, you know, which, you know, Fortnite's still great, but it's like, hey, no, I can actually, like, latch onto characters and have these personalities. Like, you go on, like, the Apex Legends subreddit, and, you know, people are making comics off of these characters, which, you know, they really don't do that in Fortnite or PUBG that I've seen anyway. Sorry, I don't delve too deeply into those communities, or really even Apex Legends, but just kind of doing my usual scroll through, I see way more attachment and, you know, sort of world building by individuals who, you know, are just playing the game. So I think seeing that level of attachment is great. And then, just the game itself is just so fluid.
It feels
and fun.
Like it feels like Call of Duty. It feels just nice and smooth as a Call of Duty.
Yeah, and
Titanfall, basically.
So much thought put behind everything. Yeah, like, you know, when you're doing the jumps, like when you initially jump out, like, okay, the thoughtfulness of saying, okay, we've got this character-based shooter. You can only have one character, like, you can only have one of each character per team, so we're going to have a character select order. So it's like, you know, Obina, Andrew, Ryan. So Obina gets to pick his character first, and then Andrew's just sort of in the middle. He gets second pick, and then I get last pick, but I'm now jump master. I get to decide where we go.
And then also when you're picking your characters, like, while you're picking one and I'm three, I can move my cursor over the one I want to do, and it'll kind of like – it doesn't lock it. You can just be an ass and take the one I wanted, but at least it gives you like, oh, that guy wants to be that person. Yeah,
he wants to be this dude, yeah. So I can maybe kind of like, cool. All right, you can be that dude. I'll be another
little
dude.
Things like that. Yeah. Yeah, and from that, from the
smoke trails when you jump, you're like, oh, this is where everyone's going, and it looks like a cool fucking fire.
But also,
show
everybody can suggest like the place where they jump, and you can okay it. You can, if you're a jump master, you can relinquish it to somebody. There's just these all sound like, yeah, okay, that sounds boring, but as a when you're playing through it, they're just awesome because you're like, oh, there's no – it doesn't put pressure on you at a lot of those times. You're like
– well, the shit that sounds obvious are the right decisions they made.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like when you say, well, yeah, that's obvious. You should be able to do that. And it's like, yeah, but nobody did that before.
Right.
And so that's what's brilliant about a lot of their decisions is like they said, oh, well, we were really playing our own game. And like the pinging system you said, I read somewhere where like a lot of the QA and development team, like for 2 weeks, they played the game in a manner of like nobody got – to know each other's names. It had randomly generated names and no voice comms, and they had to see what were their impediments to communicating what they wanted to do.
Oh, that's cool.
So they essentially ate their own dog food and said, all right, cool, yeah, none of us are getting on Discord. I'm like user 123 or user 1234. How do I communicate to you? I want that gun, or here is this resource. You should have this, or we should go that way. And that's how that whole ping system, you know, evolved.
You can say thanks when you pick up mods, like, you know, attachments for your guns, it'll tell you,
yeah.
It'll go, you have a better one than this, or you don't need this, or it's compatible. You know, like, remember PUBG days, you're like, I don't know what the 897 is, and if that even works with, like, you can never know. And this just, it attaches stuff automatically. If it says you don't need it, you don't pick it up. Like, it's just a breath of fresh air. It gets rid of, this is like, when I'm always talking about, and I've heard some blowback from people saying, well, I like all the weird friction in PUBG. This goes into design friction, like how hard is something to do, and you know, you want to make harder things sometimes harder to do, but it's just a masterclass, and like, this is what I'm talking about when I'm talking about like UI and a user experience. They just took everything that was a pain in the butt about PUBG, and it's just like, you just, it's done down to like just the raw fun of playing those games.
Exactly. And that's what I want is like, don't make your systems part of a hindrance to me. Like in PUBG, like don't make, you know, don't let me die in a bathroom because I'm sitting here going, is this armor better than this? Or do I need to equip this thing or that thing or drag that over? It's like, no, you know, this game's just like, just try to pick it up. If you can pick it up, it's better.
Right.
You know, done. You know, and that just makes sense to me. So
that's Apex. I don't want to get into it too much. I think we'll do an analysis of something of that at some point. Because it is different from what we mentioned, Anthem. It's a different game. It's just a full battle royale game. And Anthem, so that came out. You hear what we like. We'll hear Zach's thoughts on it. But so after that point, that came out, and I was like, this is amazing. And my first thought, and I don't hear some, I've heard different opinions of this, is like, why would they release this so close to Anthem? I thought Anthem was supposed to be the big, because this is all EA. It's, if you go and play it on PC, it's all in the Origin player right there. So
you
think Anthem is the thing that has to save BioWare, has to be this huge thing. So I got kind of weird about it when I'm like, well, why did they release this at all? This is kind of, I feel like it's Respawn getting back at them for what they did the Titanfall 2s. Remember EA for Titanfall 2? They said, well, you know what? Call of Duty comes out. Then we're going to put Titanfall, and then we're going to release Battlefield, our game, the week after.
Let's put the best game in between the shittier games.
Yeah, Titanfall 2 is an amazing game, but nobody cared because it was just got blown out by that noise by one of your own games you put out. I was like, why would you cannibalize it?
Yeah.
And this is, I mean, EA controls all of this. And I was like, I have a different opinion about this than I, because at the time people were like, well, maybe it's going to help people get into the Origin player, you know, which is like, yeah, I can see that, you know, on PC. That only works for PC. But like, and maybe they'll see Anthem ads and do it. Now I'm thinking, and there's also a weird thing too, that like Division 2 is coming out very quickly now too, which is also digging in more so in Anthem's. But I have a feeling, because then something happened with Anthem, because we got the first couple, they put out a demo like a month before it came out. And I don't know if you can call it a demo, because most of the world couldn't play it.
I heard about that. Man. I did not experience that frustration.
I got in for like 20 minutes. Yeah. And it would be Zach, who was like, I was like, oh, cool. I got in for 20 minutes. And I tried again the weekend, couldn't get in. Zach, who was like, I want to play this. I rebought it and I want to play it. He couldn't get, he got on the phone with EA support for like 2 hours.
What?
Like,
wow.
Yeah, getting them to, he's like,
I didn't know he was that.
He's like, got
it,
them.
Yeah.
He had to restart his computer and do his cache, reinstall the. It was at least like an hour. So just going through things to do. I was like, dude, man, I'm sorry.
Jesus.
And
I wish people wanted to play the stuff I
did. Yeah. And he was just getting, like, he got to the point where he's gotten a refund on it now because he just did the, I just did the $15 thing because I was like, well, and I'm glad I did.
Same.
Because now it's like, this will be, it just renewed the other day. I was like, well, this will be the last month I probably do it for this because spoiler alert, Anthem's kind of a mess. And we can also get into this, too.
Let's just say that.
Let's just say that.
Put it out there. Yeah, it's a mess. It's a freaking mess right now. Technically, design-wise, it's a mess.
And this is as we record this right at the beginning of March 1st, 2nd, 3rd, you know, 2019. Yeah. So,
and I...
No, I was just saying, so that just to say, we're trying to say this at least now, because I think we're going to have a much further conversation about it, because this is, Apex is because of the Battle Royale kind of tradition of the podcast. Apex is because we talked about Destiny 1 and the mistakes it made so much, and this is such an interesting thing in echoing that, but making it look worse. Like, it's just I'm sure we're going to have an analyzing episode for this as well, just... some of the things, like maybe how not to launch your game. It might be a good topic for the future.
I guess, but it's one of those things, where I just feel like this kind of trip up is, I think
it's not even that, it's like design decisions too. They're just weird as crap.
Yeah, I thought that we were past a lot of this as far as like launching these sort of MMO multiplayer games and then just being so damned half-baked but so hyped. I guess that's just, I may have been stupid about that, like thinking that had kind of gone away and there was a better quality bar, but apparently
like
not.
Forcing people to release a game.
Yeah.
Because I think in bottom line, this is just a year too early.
Yeah.
It might not have solved some of the issues, but I still think it's like a year too early.
Oh, absolutely. They should be giving this at least 6 more months, probably another year.
It's holiday season. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Release it around Christmas and be confident about it, because I mean, honestly, there's a kernel there that is good about this game. I mean, for heaven's sakes, you're playing like Iron Man, flying around, you know, doing
all
this
cool
stuff.
Yeah, they get that
part,
all the stuff, right, yeah.
Yeah, and the weapons are, you know, well, the powers are neat. The weapons aren't that, like, super interesting to me. But the thing is, unlike Destiny, your powers recycle so fast that, you know, that becomes my primary method of doing things, and that's interesting to me because now I'm kind of like using my class to accomplish a goal. But I mean, not to get too deep on that, it's just, you know, they drop the ball on like everything around that, I feel like. So like,
I mean, but as a community though, if they were to delay to like Christmas time, don't you think we as the gamers would probably have more negative feedback than
if they release what it is now. I mean, I'm just assuming they would have fixed some of the stuff by then. But yeah, I mean, if there are some, to your point, there are some design. A lot of it's just mostly how it's structured to me, and I don't think you could have fixed that. I don't know if that was all intentional. So yeah, I mean, that you could be right.
Especially because it's been in the news and been hyped for 2 years. So if it came out like, you know, around this time when they were like, oh no, we're pushing it to Christmas.
I always felt that like this is too soon anyway. I always didn't think it was going to come out now. I always thought like, there's no way it's going to come out. Because it's only been 2 years. 2 years is not a lot of time, especially.
No.
But I didn't know they've been working on it for 6 years though too, which makes it even crazier to think about.
Well, and honestly, it's one of those things though, if you've already invested 6 years, like take a lesson from Team Fortress 2. Take a step back. That took, what, 9-10 years to get out? It's like, I know that may not be feasible in a business sense, but, you know, if you've already got 6 years dumped into this and you're going to release, and again, this isn't just like totally a design thing, because designs can change. You can, you know, flip that around. There are technical issues with that game, like crashes and like me losing items and just all sorts of stuff around it that are just like, why did you think this was a go-to-market strategy? And then having like a... you know, a, what was it, a week of like early access for people who went on Origin? No, it's like we were beta testers. Like this week, early access you gave people who did the $15 a month thing. Yeah, we were just beta testers. It didn't work right then. It didn't work right on the day one patch. Oh, now it's released. We're fixing all that. Yeah, well you you released it a week before that, motherfuckers, because I paid you money to access that, and it didn't work right, and now it still doesn't work right, so your messaging is kind of shoddy, you know?
That is the thing. There's like, it's the day one patch. Like, day one is February 15th when you said the people that paid you the most and your biggest fans got access to it.
Some people paid $100 for that shit, so...
Yeah, and to play it on that day, and they're like, well, that's not day one, so those aren't really glitches yet. That's not... I was like... Because I can see, if you really, I mean, we can talk, get into this later, but I think you get into it, like, you could have a demo. They could have had a beta now.
Yeah.
Have this beta come out now. It doesn't come out then. Then you can actually get, like, feedback and change some of these systematic things or design things, you know, like, look into it, get that feedback and the stuff they are going to do now. But it's just a disaster. I mean, this thing's supposed to save BioWare, but it's been... I'm usually very apologetic to this stuff, and we're very not usually hypercritical of these things like this, but it's a mess.
It is. It's
right. Do you think there's any saving grace for, especially when games come out like this, where it's like, even like when it's, especially from, it's like when it's a huge studio who've invested a lot of money into it and they release in a state like Anthem did, you think there is any redeeming quality for it to ever become a hit?
All this depends on their reaction. Like I know we're bitching. I know we're saying like, hey, this is effed up. This is effed up. You know, I don't like this. I don't like that. But like I said, I think there's definitely a kernel of a good idea there. How they react and respond to this, how EA allows BioWare to handle this, will speak volumes. Like if they give them the leeway to make drastic changes when they want, as fast as they want, they could maybe salvage this. I may be being a supreme optimist here, but you know, it's like, I don't think this is an unsalvageable thing. You know, give them the time, give them the budget, give them the leeway to make decisions, and it could probably turn out okay. You know, we'll see at the end of the year. Like I stopped playing. I'm going to give them a few months to kind of iterate over things and then come back to it and see what's there. But
yeah,
you know, I just think that the systems they've got there, the way that game looks, the environments, they're great. They just need to layer on some more lore, some better story, and you fix the bugs. Like, I mean, I played a couple of missions where I got all the way to the end and lost all my items. Like, just it crashed right after we beat the boss, which means I couldn't reconnect to the session, so all the little item tokens I picked up went away. Yeah, twice that happened in a night. I just cursed and went to bed. I was just like, I'm done with this, you know. So.
Yeah, there are some fundamental things that I think are weird that the only way they can be fixed. Like, I think that environment, one, it's kind of bland, but also, two, it's kind of weird to get through when you're trying to just get across somewhere, like not just to one mission thing, but to other ones. Mm-hmm. And like the loading and catching up with like just all the loading screens and all these other things. Some of those are kind of fundamental to how it's structured, but you could create new content. There could be a new map that could fix everything. Like you could really, a lot of my problems, if you did a new map, that could change the way some of the loading works, some of the other stuff. That could fix a lot of the stuff, you know, changing the story where it's more integrated and you don't just have these random dumb conversations with people. Like that's make it like more like Mass Effect again. Like there's just stuff that like you could radically change it. I just hope that because they already released their thing for the next 90 days, here's all our stuff. These all these new stories coming in, but they're kind of doing what Destiny was doing, like say Destiny 2 when it first came out and people like, hey, I loved it, but there's not enough content. And they're like, well, we have our plan for all this stuff. You know, I'm sure that's by Activision at the time. And it took them a year to go, hold on, we're just going to change how we do this all together. You know what I mean? Because that's not what you want. You don't want just crappy little, here's some more four story missions and here, you know, that's what, but that I fear that's what BioWare's doing right now for the next, like, that's not, how about you just stop and fix everything first or start thinking about fundamental things you can change before you start adding this bullshit story you want to, you know, to like, we have a new chapter starting in this lore. I'm like, okay, but
guess what? I wanted to fast forward through almost every damn conversation in that game because people are just blathering on about bullshit. And there's only a few times I actually cared. Like some of the bigger cutscenes were good, but yeah, if you're gonna fill the pipe with more of that, no, not interested.
Yeah, I just don't know what's happening within. Like, I mean, I because Dragon Age. I mean, even Dragon Age is more interesting than Dragon Age and Mass Effect, they're great games. I love playing those games. Well, they have a bunch of talking and stuff. Like,
well, here's the thing is, like, the BioWare of old, I think, is gone. Like, I love Mass Effect 2. It's a fantastic game. I would sit there.
That was the big poo the bed.
That's well, and even Mass Effect 3 wasn't that interesting to me. But, like, for some reason, Mass Effect 2, I would sit there and listen to
That's the best one.
I'd listen to all these conversations. These characters were deep. I was like, oh, I want to make sure this guy sticks with me. I want to make, you know, I had investment in that. Knights of the Old Republic, those type of, wait, was that? Except if I were Obsidian. That was Obsidian.
No, I think you're right, actually. Was that BioWare?
What? Which game? The first one was BioWare. The second one was Obsidian.
That's right. Okay, that's what I'm meaning. Yeah, but, you know, it's like KOTOR. Brilliant game. Loved it. You know, but I just don't know that BioWare exists anymore. I don't know who's feeding that pipe for that.
There's a lot of stuff. Anyway, I just wanted to hit this because the first one I said, I don't know if we're going to hit both of them, but I was like, I think both of them, Apex and Anthem, are going to be topics of discussion this year on the show. And we're going to hit back on that and compare some of the things. And
so, crazy thing, maybe a little crazy thing. Like, do you think Apex Legends was released maybe to pad what they thought Anthem was going to fall down on? Like,
that's what I think now. I'm actually thinking that was my conspiracy theory. This is good. And then even Division 2, because you could say Apex at the time, even when Giant Bomb, those guys didn't think it was a big deal. It's like, why are they cannibalizing? It's only like 3 weeks away. Like, Apex, and all we've been thinking about is Apex. If that didn't come out, I'd just be thinking about Anthem, you know. But then also Division 2 is coming out like in 2 weeks.
Yeah, but wait,
which is aping.
But Division 2 is Ubisoft, though. So that's, are you talking
about? Oh, no. You're totally right.
Yeah.
You're totally right. But like, so.
But yeah, wouldn't you still delay if you
do it after Division 2 comes out? Because Division 2 is the more established, like, that's what I was saying. It's a more established thing. And it's like, people were ready to play Division 2 because Division actually had the same problem. They were in a weird state, but they totally came around and everybody loved that game and they stuck with it.
That's true.
So
X was quote unquote, I guess, a new IP. So you couldn't really trust that.
Yeah. Either. So it's just weird. You know?
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know, man.
You know, I think my favorite thing about the Anthem release is after I'd played it, I found out that Neil Blomkamp had done a spot for it. And that was my happiest moment, just to get more Neil Blomkamp footage. Give that guy a video game movie or just a sci-fi movie. I mean, he's made them before, but, you know, give him a video game type of thing. So,
yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. And Apex, it has Chappie, basically.
Yeah, Pathfinder.
it's across, yeah. So, yeah, so I think we'll get onto that. There's a lot to analyze. Maybe I would talk about, I was initially interested how I was used to be initially critical how Destiny, the promise of an open world MMO, like FPS MMO kind of thing. And I was critical how they sliced it up and how they presented it. Since then, I'm fine with that because this is a tenth of what that, like, this does it even weirder, I think, when you're just like, I just want an MMO, you know, none of them even do it like World of Warcraft does it or anything, you know? So it'd be interesting to talk about that and find some topics to get on there.
Well, I'll tell you, I want to go, I mean, there's a lot we can break down with Anthem because, like, their whole UI for, like, mission selection, I just want to rail on that for a whole episode, I feel like.
And they've done a hot fix, which just adds another menu to it to make it simpler, but it's, like, good Lord.
It's still, like, the most confusing thing I've seen. I don't know. Anyway.
And Apex is so easy. Their UI stuff is phenomenal, how easy and solid it is. So,
yeah,
I think they're different games, but it's just hard not to compare them right now. Like, it's hard to compare Anthem and Destiny because they're sort of the same thing.
Yeah. Well, my one takeaway from it is, like, as well as Respawn did with Apex, I'm like, yeah, give me your Star Wars game, please. Like, please say you have that same leeway and refinement in a Star Wars game because a lot of Star Wars games have sucked recently.
That'd be great. That'd be awesome. All right, so we'll hit that again. I'm sure Zach has a lot to say about it. He's played more than us probably some of those things. So until the meantime, let's not talk about Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/thedebuglog. You want to help us out. You can go to our Facebook group, The Debug Lounge. Since we've recorded last, there's been a big development, Obina. What has thou wrought upon the debug loggers?
Debuggers.
You've created something. What did you create?
That's true. It's been that long.
Yeah, it's been 2 months since we did this.
That's too funny. But yeah, we created the long-awaited Discord channel, which everyone is invited to. I think we posted it in our Facebook group, Facebook Debug Lounge. Yeah, it's been there. So you can go there. There should be a non-expiry link to get an invite to our channel. There's already plenty of people in there, plenty of discussion going on about Apex, about Fortnite.
Community development.
I think we've been talking about. Yeah, so a lot of good stuff. We've got a good topic. So it's like an extension of our debug lounge on our Facebook group. So it's a nice little group and community there. So please join, go to Facebook, find that link, and join the channel.
Cool. Yeah, I need to. I haven't delved into it yet. I do get alerts, so I see when everybody says something, but I'm like, my fingers on the pulse, but I just haven't. I'm creeping. That's what I'm doing.
Yeah, you're a lurker, man.
Yeah,
lurker on your own side. On it. Not that I'm much better. But.
All right, that's all for tonight. Until next time, I'm on Twitter at Andrew_Curry. That's CURRIE.
And I'm at Obean. That's O with an H. Beans with a Z.
And I'm at R.E. Kilgore, K-I-L-L-G-O-R-E.
All right, until next time, we will see you later.
Peace. I got you.